You are listening to the News Project for the week of April 29th, 2019, brought to you by GNAT TV. This week's episode features stories about the historical artifacts of a 20th century Vermont soldier, a Vermont Futures Project presentation on healthcare at the Manchester Library, and a discussion from the Manchester Select Board meeting of April 30th about problems caused by the Manchester Farmers Market.
Hey folks, Haas from GNAT TV. I'm still at the Manchester Historical Society. I haven't left. I'm still wearing the same clothes. I know I should have changed something and made it seem like I did leave and come back, but that's not true. I'm still here, and I'm still here with Sean. And we're going to talk today about something really cool he has to do with the war. This is 100 years ago this year, World War I ended. And he's got something really cool to show us. So I need to go find him.
Okay, Haas, what I want to show you is in this box. So,
it's a hat.
It's a hat. It's actually a beret.
It's a what?
It's a beret.
Oh, yes, thank
you. It's a beret. The fact that we have this, so do you have any idea what that stands for, that little symbol?
No, I do not.
That actually stands for the Yankee Division. The Yankee Division was the 26th Division, and it was made up of mostly soldiers from New England.
Oh, okay, very cool.
So after the war, after World War I ended, a lot of these soldiers, they got together and they started a veterans organization.
Okay.
And we were incredibly lucky because the daughter of the soldier, who was Alfred Roberts, his daughter Janice Cable, who lives up in Rutland, said, I have father's veterans uniform. Now, I know it's not his World War I uniform, but it is his World War I veterans uniform. Are you interested?
Very cool.
And I almost jumped out of my skin. And I said, when can I come?
That's right. How far do I need to drive? Yeah. I want it. So there's something else here, isn't there?
So there is. So this is his actual uniform.
Oh, look at that.
Which I have a wonderful picture of him standing in. Posing at the Albert Smith Studios in Manchester, Vermont, which I'm going to send to you and is going to be scrolling across your screen any moment.
Oh,
you
can very see. Cool.
He was a very handsome gentleman, but here he's wearing, you know, wearing this very uniform, which is in great condition. The trousers are underneath. We also received the letters, which I'm going to set the letter down here next to the uniform just to give you a little bit of an idea. So this is a letter he wrote on July 24th, 1918. On July 21st, he was gassed in the trenches. And so he wrote his parents a few days later. He said,
wow.
He said, just a few lines to let you know I am feeling fine, considering what I have been through. This, no doubt, by the time you know, I was slightly gassed, but I'm feeling myself again.
He's being modest.
And you can see the sensors cut out a big chunk here.
Oh, is that? Got it. Interesting.
That's what it is. So, and then he goes on to talk a little bit about where he is. But as you can imagine, a mother being at home and receiving a letter. No doubt by this time you know that I was slightly gassed, but I'm feeling myself again.
You know, those sensors took away a lot of history on the war, didn't they?
They did.
But never thought about that.
It was by design, you know.
So, how long did this gentleman last? Do we have a sense of when he passed away?
Not only did Alfred Roberts serve in World War I with the Yankee Division, but come World War II, he enlisted again in the Navy and became a CB. Which was short for the Construction Battalion. And he spent the entire theater in the South Pacific island hopping, ended up in Okinawa, Japan, ended up with malaria, dengue fever, encountered hostile fire. So he's one of, as far as we know, according to his brother Clarence, who actually wrote a biography on him, one of the few men of Manchester who served in both wars.
Wow.
And faced enemy fire. He came home, lived in Manchester, married, had children, but he did die prematurely. He's also out here in Factory Point Cemetery. He died in the early 1950s.
Wow.
Yeah. But the fact that we actually have his veterans uniform,
yeah,
and up here, which was on top, this is actually his Navy CB uniform, which this one I'll feel a little more comfortable about handling. As the tissue goes down. So this is his Navy CB uniform, which we also have a wonderful photo of him posing in. So, you know, we have, you know, someone's nearly their complete military record, you know, including letters. And these are the types of things that we're able to preserve for future generations that, you know, you can't put a price on, especially for, you know, a small town like Manchester to have, you know, these pieces of the past.
I'll say one last thing. This is going to look really cool in the museum.
Someday it will. Absolutely agree with you 100%.
On Friday, April 26th, the Vermont Futures Project touched down in Manchester at the community library to present some findings and discuss trends in healthcare and wellness in Vermont. The Vermont Futures Project was launched in 2016 by the Vermont Chamber Foundation, an affiliate of the Vermont State Chamber of Commerce, and tracks and promotes the state's economic activity. A panel of three executives in the hospital and healthcare field followed William Schuldeis, chairman of the Futures Project and the CEO of the Vermont Teddy Bear Company. They described the direction they saw Vermont's healthcare industry heading. Tom Dee, the CEO and president of the Southwestern Vermont Medical Center in Bennington, was one of the presenters. He spoke to the transition underway within healthcare centers and hospitals to focus on and encourage wellness and keeping people out of the hospital rather than treating people only when they get sick and charging them for medical services at that time, the so-called fee-for-service model.
In the past, we were just caring for people. We provided services that hopefully made people better. Now it's different, though. Now the definition of what we call a definition of the H, the hospital, is moving towards a much broader realization that we're here to help to keep people healthy, not just care for their illnesses.
An alternative model, known as the all-payer model, is one where hospitals would charge the same price for each service to every payer, forcing the hospitals to compete with each other on price, much like other businesses do.
So we've been waiting for people to get sick and treating them sort of on a piecemeal basis, charging for every procedure and office visit and surgery and appointment that people have. And so we know that as fact number one, that the healthcare system has sort of been designed around that premise. The second thing we know is that if you look at the pie chart here, 80%, roughly 80% of our health is determined not by the doctor we go to or the amount of health care we get or even the quality of health care we get, but it's determined by behavior, environment, and genetics. So what we do in our lives, the choices we make around exercise and smoking and where we live, the environment, which is a lot of the social determinants of health, including, Bill mentioned that every community needs safe sidewalks and that those that have those safe sidewalks prosper in a different kind of way for something as simple as safe sidewalks.
Tom Dee also focused on Bennington County's health profile, which overall is among the laggards in the state. By most major indicators, Bennington County is on the bottom end, not just in wellness indicators, but in other factors like employment, income, and housing that have a direct bearing on an individual's health, he maintained.
A little before I got there, we lost almost 2,000 jobs. And this doesn't even count the latest casualty. I saw kids almost casualty of war where we're going to lose another 140 jobs with the closure of Southern Vermont College. So this is a very significant challenge in terms of the job loss in our area.
Claudio Fort, the CEO of the Rutland Regional Medical Center, and Jeff Thiemann, the CEO of the Vermont Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, were the other presenters, who, like Dee, described a push to promote healthy lifestyles and also warned of the growing difficulty in finding qualified nurses and luring doctors and physicians to rural areas. Afterwards, we had a chance to talk briefly with Tom Dee and his observations on the Vermont healthcare scene.
Service to a value-based model of reimbursement is challenging because right now hospitals, health systems are living in both systems. Part of our reimbursement is fee-for-service, part of it is value-based. I think once the systems move much more to a single arrangement, a single model, it's going to help facilitate change much quicker. Because right now it's a little schizophrenic. We're not quite sure, you know, what we should be doing all the time in terms of handling the different type of services and the different systems. It confuses providers. It confuses patients. So I think it's part of, it's just part of the making the transformation to a single system, making that decision, going forward, and putting all your resources in that one direction. And so that's going to take some time. It's going to take another, probably over the next 10 years, but it's going to happen at an accelerated rate.
The Vermont Futures Project will be holding its annual conference in Burlington on May 30th, where the focus will be on the changing nature of the state's workforce. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
We have the vending application for the farmers market. How many years has it been at that location now, John? Several years.
I think since 2010.
2010. Wow, that long.
That's my hunch, yeah.
So going on a decade.
Confirm
that. When, over the years, there's been a little resistance from the neighbors, and we do understand that there's impacts on the neighborhood of having that activity at the park. And this year we've received a couple of letters and contact from some of the people in the area, so we thought it'd be certainly the right thing to do to listen to those concerns. I think they've been fairly well stated in their letters. I generally don't try to interject my thoughts into the beginning of a conversation, but I will say that I feel that the activity at Adams Park has generally been a positive thing. I think it's a good use of a tract of land that's named for my great-grandfather. I like to see that kind of activity in the center of town. And if there's, I know that you folks have worked hard over the years to try to have it go as smoothly as possible and with the least amount of impact, and I'm sure that'll continue to be what you try to do if, in fact, we continue the relationship. But anyone wants to speak to it, my ears are always open, and so is my mind. Tim, welcome and thank you. There is a microphone at the podium for the TV camera, so it's a little better.
Thanks, Ivan. I'm Tim Stevenson. I've lived here full-time since 1972-ish and participated in different civic events with Ivan and Wayne, mostly fireworks, huh?
Yeah.
I live in Adam's house, his family house. We have the great joy in renovating, restoring it, and using it as a commercial property, which it was built for. And we're proud to be on the green. Many of us in our neighborhood feel it's time for the farmers market to move on. It's grown, it's been a success, but it's too big for the park. Lot of problems. When the market's going on, parking for customers of the various businesses around the green is impossible. And also the funeral home, which is, since the street was reconstructed last summer, the funeral home only has one parking space in front of it, whereas it had two last year. The funeral home also has a tremendous problem when they have a service or calling hours on Thursday. Services that would be the big problem in the afternoon. And they have had those events during this time. And it's a real problem for their clients to try to deal with the traffic. And the church parking lot at the Episcopal Church, of course, is parked full. So parking is a major problem for the funeral home. The other thing the funeral home is very concerned about, and we're all concerned about, is public safety. Years ago, I lived on Elm Street, and I had an art gallery antique shop there. And when I had an event, I would hire a deputy sheriff. The town required it, urged me, for safety. And I hired Roy Bailey. He's a great guy and a good friend. But at the park, there's no security, and people are in la-la land, lackadaisical, walking across the 7A, and also across Park Place and Center Hill. They're just wandering, and the kids are wandering. Why somebody hasn't been hurt, I just don't understand it.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.